ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Trippy Politics Process and
Potpourri.
I'm your host, Corey Elia, and as always, my co-host,
Leslie McLam,
KPOO Portland.
Today we are going to be focusing a little more on the protest aspect of our three Ps. We're going to be talking to one of the on-the-ground journalists reporting on the situation that's been unfolding over the last few months that started with the George Floyd death in Minneapolis and sparked nationwide protests.
I'm Robert Evans. I'm a conflict journalist. I've worked in Iraq and Syria and Ukraine and protests all over the United States. I've been here since night one of the protests in Portland. I've probably somewhere between 50 and 60 nights out that I've done. And I'm high as a kite right now because a fascist hit my hand and broke it with a baton the other day. So I'm on quite a few painkillers at the moment. But
I myself have been like right next to you pretty much since the beginning, probably about the same nights off. I think I've been about 60 days out.
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, and yesterday was insane. Maybe give us a rundown on what happened with your hand and what occurred yesterday.
Yeah, so yesterday was like a confluence of a couple of things. There was those supposed QAnon rallies that were happening all over the country, right? The Save the Children rallies or something. So like that was part of what was going on. It was mainly a Back the Blue rally. And like one of the things we've seen since is that there's actually some conflict between a couple of different groups that were part of the rally. But they got, you know, the real purpose of it was that the far right has been getting increasingly angry about Portland. Due in large part to how it's been portrayed in the media and the fact that it's been kind of like made to look like this den of terrorists, you know, actively trying to destroy the United States, which, you know, terrorists, I think, is a stretch. Actively trying to destroy the United States, maybe. Like, some of them, for sure. Like,
abolish this, abolish the
US. There's definitely some folks who actively want to destroy the United States, but terrorism, I think, is a bit much for people whose worst crime is lighting a trash can on fire. And some rock throwing. So you've got this right wing that's been getting like really lathered up to the point where like they believe that like there's thousands and thousands of like vicious Antifa kids like all drugged up and waiting to die to, you know, steal some Christian's flag or whatever. So it's just gotten very much unhinged. And it kind of all came to a head with them all because there was an assault, week before last on Sunday, outside of a 7-Eleven near a protest that got blamed on the protesters. It was a very ugly assault. Guy got kicked in the head. The victim, the dude who was injured, has come out and said that it was not protesters who attacked him, and he doesn't feel like they were tied to the protest in any way. He's attended BLM marches. It was just like a terrible people who were assaulted somebody. But it got played up in the right-wing media, and so like everything came to a fever pitch, and a couple of hundred of them, it had to have been about 300, 400 maybe a little less, at kind of the height of the rally. And so they showed up, and kind of a big chunk of them were there from the start. Because when I first arrived, there was 100 or so Proud Boys and militia people, a couple of them with guns, a lot of them in armor, all of them with, like, knives and sticks and a ton of mace, and, you know, maybe 30 anti-fascists, kind of, to on the other side of things. And that changed as the day went on. A lot more anti-fascists came in. And kind of the far right side, at least, maybe topped off at like, yeah, maybe 300 or so. And, you know, almost immediately, especially when they had the number advantage, it turned into a series of brawls. You know, someone would grab at someone else's flag or whatever. Sometimes there are some clear cases. There's one big ugly fight that I saw a member of the right wing side threw a jug of orange juice and then like a water bottle first. But a lot of the time, I couldn't tell you who started it. It was just like, oh, now they're fighting, right? Like, I can't always, there were times when it was clear and times when it wasn't, but it was just a series of really ugly brawls. And they were, they really liked when they could grab one person off alone or when they could knock people's friends away with mace or with sticks. They really loved having three to four people just pounding a guy on the ground. And a lot of the things that, you know, the right wing side done did that I saw them do, I would say I saw that the left wing side do in terms of, like, mace, obviously, throwing of objects. You know, there were some difference in the type of objects thrown, but, like, you know, shoving, obviously, both sides brought sticks. What I didn't see on the left wing side was the ganging up in groups and just pounding people who were on the ground and helpless. Like, that was the thing that that we documented a lot, and a lot of people who hadn't been fighting who got attacked, including myself. So I was walking up at one point to film a group of people beating each other up with sticks, and this right-wing protester with a big blue shield that said, "In God We Trust," ran up. And I was very clearly pressed. Like, I was not in the middle of a scrum. I wasn't, like, advancing with, you know, a shield wall or whatever. Like, I was on my own with nothing but a camera in my hand. It's a number of angles that make it clear. And he hits me right on the hand, breaks my finger, knocks my phone out. So I confront him, and, like, my hand's bleeding, and I'm yelling at him. And then he proceeds to attempt to knock me to the ground. Like, he slams me with his shield, and I just kind of stand there and take it because I'm bigger than him. Yeah, he just repeatedly assaulted me. And the kind of one of the things I wanted to do as soon as he assaulted me the first time is I wanted to, number one, confront him again, because I wanted to make it very clear that he was assaulting me because he was committing a crime, that this wasn't like a mistaken identity, that he was assaulting press because he was committing a crime. And so he did, and that was on camera now. And the other thing is that the more agitated he got, the more his mask got off. And so we actually have some good shots of both his tattoos. And anyway, we've identified him now. So there's, and he assaulted quite a number of people. There's a number of someone who he gave a concussion to, with that baton of his. So we're going to go after him. Like, I'm going to sue him. I want to take whatever is his.
Yeah. Sorry. That's just quite a crazy experience to have, like, seen the video. I wasn't there to see it, like, on the ground right next to you, but I did watch the video. And I saw similar incidents of people using what looked like handles of axes.
Axe handles are a common one, yeah.
Baseball bats.
Dowels, I think, like wooden dowels are a pretty common one.
Just, like, I don't know if they're metal or wood pipes, but a load of those that mysterious objects wrapped in tape, they came basically geared for a fight. Not only that, there's a number that showed up with shields. Mm-hmm. There's a number that showed up with some masks. I mean, not as many as were on the left side.
Not as many masks.
Not as many, but there were some people that had some face protection, and they were thinking of that. Some helmets. Things that have been identified by the Portland police as objects that you show up in readiness if you have a shield and you have a gas mask or face protection and a helmet. And these people had all those elements on top of firearms, baseball bats, metal poles, actively beating and spraying people at will. I mean, just without provocation. They destroyed private property and sent people to the hospital.
They assaulted a van. Yeah, so just for no reason decided to destroy somebody's a van full of snacks. You know, it was frustrating. It is one of those things where it's important to note that the police did nothing, because it's an important story in the saga of how bad the police here are at their jobs. Because, like, people complain that the police aren't there to protect them, and a bunch of violent fascists comes to town and assaults people. Some of them wave guns around and, like, are beating people and committing numerous felonies. Some of whom, at least one of whom, was out on an open warrant and was seen by police and allowed to show up. So, like, yeah, Tiny Tozy, yeah. So, makes the case that the protesters are making that, like, the police are not good at protecting people. But also at the same time, one of the things that became clear as the day went on, as ugly as things got, is that the crowd did not need protection. Because as the day went on, more and more people showed up on the left-wing side of things until they outnumbered the right by a decent amount on the whole. And their shield wall was much smaller, but it was made up of people who had spent a lot of time fighting in a shield wall. And so eventually, like, the right, you know, they had a bigger shield wall. But as soon as a firework blew up in the middle of it, and then they started, like, macing, like, there was this big standoff where you had, like, their big shield wall and then a much smaller left-wing shield wall, and everybody's kind of, like, hucking stuff, plastic bottles and non-plastic bottles, paintballs. They're shooting paintballs at each other, right? People are throwing things at each other, but it's kind of a standoff. And this group of, I believe it was four black female activists with like a BLM banner. And they're not in fighting gear. Like, I don't even think they had face masks on. Walk past their line, kind of to walk between the two shield walls, and they grab for the BLM flag, and it starts a fight, and like the people fight them off and push them off, and they, once the fight goes against them and they realize they're not going to get this flag, they start macing like crazy, and none of them had face protection on, so they wind up macing their own line, which scatters a huge chunk of the line, and then the chunk that remains, a single firework blows up in the middle of them, which happened to the anti-fascist side a second earlier, and like they didn't care because they've had it happen a billion times. All of the right-wing folks scattered, and this huge crowd of heavily armed, like, liberty movement people who, you know, I grew up in Texas and Oklahoma during, like, the 90s. I remember what the kind of the liberty movement, the right-wing sort of folks are supposed to hate more than anything else. And this crowd of those guys all run to the IRS building for shelter because it's where the feds are. So, like, it was just, like, growing up on a steady diet of, like, people being enraged over Waco and seeing, like, you went to the you went to the IRS headquarters for safety. Like, okay.
Most of the day, I didn't have my gas mask or goggles, and somebody ended up handing me goggles just at that moment that you're describing when they started to retreat back.
Yeah.
And luckily, I was able to actually record some video, and I actually went live and recorded those same guys scattering in multiple directions, but a small crowd of them getting chased to a parking garage, getting chased up. And then they pulled guns out on the crowd that was right there in the parking garage.
Yeah, I love doing that.
And I believe you actually were in the crowd.
I was on another side of things because the guy that we confronted was like swinging a baton at everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
But earlier in the day, you also ran into Alan Sweeney.
I did run into Alan. Yeah. Yeah. We had a little conversation.
So was that before or after your finger got broken?
Oh, this was before my finger got broken. That was after I had a shoving match with another guy before that, because his line advanced and like they wanted me to move, and they kept doing like they kept yelling like cops, like move, 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 in the way that cops do, and it was like, you're not cops. Number one, the cop's right to make me move is extremely limited by repeated federal restraining orders. So, like, the cops don't even have the right to always tell me to move. You certainly don't. But, yeah, it was very silly. Then I ran into... And then the same thing kind of happened with Alan Sweeney. And he did the whole... He's a very big guy, right? And I think he kind of trades off of that. And he repeatedly demanded that I move and said, like, you're going to move and all this stuff. And, like, threatened me with a can of mace.
Even though you're in a gas mask?
Yeah, I was in a gas mask. I think that's why he didn't mace me. And so then he had to decide, like, am I going to try to rip his mask off? And it's like, yeah, do that, Alan. Like, I'm standing in broad daylight in the middle of a line, an unarmed journalist filming somebody that you're advancing on. Please rip my mask off and mace me. Like, I know you have a truck, and I wouldn't mind having a spare truck. Like, I don't know.
So, after your experience yesterday, how should I say this? Are you looking forward to covering another similar protest and counter-protest rally in the near future, or are you going to stick to the nightly Portland police protests?
Oh, I'm going to continue doing both. You know, I'm going to keep making the nightly protests as often as I can. I'm going to have some healing time with this where I'll probably be altering my coverage because frontline coverage with one hand might be a little bit of a pain. There's plenty of press up at the front these days. I'll be there at the next right-wing, you know, rally or whatever, like the next, if they come back to Portland, I will come. I don't enjoy this. I don't enjoy being around these guys. I don't like them, you know? The issues of police brutality, you know, is incredibly important. The police are an incredibly powerful institution, you know, whether or not, you know, you believe that they should be defunded or retrained or abolished entirely. Police are a huge part of all of our lives, and it's an absolutely important issue. Even if you don't think the protesters are doing the right thing, you understand that, like, policing is a major issue. These people shouldn't be important to anybody. I think they're violent goons, and I don't like being around them.
So, yeah, I myself have been covering the protests for so long. I mean, your experience was coming from Frontline's war reporting, yeah. Correct? How would you compare the two? Honestly, like, what you've seen here in Portland and what you've seen covering on the war front lines.
There's been a couple of nights out in Portland where it has been as close to war as you can get without live rounds, which, again, still not war, because live rounds are a real different thing. But, like, the night that the fence came down out in front of the federal courthouse, that was, like, I felt like there could be live round, because, I mean, there were points where a man was sweeping my body with a machine gun. That was very close and, like, in terrifying. And, like, people were having, like, I was watching people's body armor get shot off of them because of, like, the rubber bullet fire was so dense. And the same thing was kind of true on July the 4th, right? There were just so many explosions. So it's definitely, you know, one thing I'll say is that, like, if your goal would be to become a war correspondent working in a city like Portland during these things, like, is some aspects of it are good training. It teaches you how to not panic under explosions. It teaches you how to, like, not panic when you are being rushed, when, like, things are happening that are where there's, like, kind of an imminent time limit, right? Where you have to act and react and not do it based entirely on fear. But also, like, you don't have time to really sit and think about it. It teaches you how to cope with that and function and, like, handle mechanical tasks while in danger. One of the things that worries me about it, in which it's very different from war, is that police munitions work very different than live rounds. So the right way to handle police munitions as a journalist is to get as close to them as possible. And you wear the proper armor and you want to get right, because you want to be right next to those explosions. You want to see those tear gas things arcing. Like, you want to be in the middle of it. And if you get hit by the odd, if you're properly equipped, you get hit by pepper balls or whatever. It's, you know, you might get a bruise, but you're more or less going to be fine most of the time. Actual bullets and, like, mortars and stuff, rockets don't work that way. You want to stay the fuck back and, like, under heavy cover and all this stuff. So that, to that extent, it's very different, but it does teach you how to function under pressure in ways that I think would be useful for people, like, looking at doing kind of more conflict-oriented work.
And then I don't know how close we are to getting wrapped up here, but I definitely wanted to not forget to have people find what you do, to follow what you do. So if you want to tell them where they can go and listen to your podcast and follow your work.
Oh, sure.
And follow your work.
You can find me on Twitter at iWriteOkay. My podcast is Behind the Bastards. You can find us on like Spotify or whatever. Any place that has podcasts, you can find Behind the Bastards. We're with iHeartRadio and stuff. And those are the big things that I do.
I thank you so much for your time, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I wish you a quick recovery with your hand.
Yeah, so do I.
KBOO Portland.